Hey, I'm Josh Barrow, your new host of Left, Right, and Center. Every week, join Rich Lowry, Bob Scheer, and me for a contentious yet civilized debate of the week's big political stories, from ISIS to the U.S. economy to this 47-candidate presidential election we're having. You can find Left, Right, and Center on KCRW's iTunes page.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Well, this week I have a real discovery to tell you all about. This is a book called Imperium. It's by an author named Christian Kracht, K-R-A-C-H-T. It's a fiction of the South Seas, which in this case means it's a model of an imperialist novel, where people go to exotic places. In this case, it follows a man named August Engelhardt, who believes in the consumption of coconuts, that coconuts are the perfect food. Coconuts, nudity, sunlight, will be the new paradise, the carefree future. And he goes there to the South Seas, to what is now Papua New Guinea.
Yes. But he does go there at the turn of the last century, in 1901, 1899, something like that.
When they were all going. When it was said that the islands in the South Seas were the pearls in the ocean of the German Empire.
But they didn't go as nudists. They went as colonizers.
Yes, and he goes to laze and to live a different kind of life. Ideally, he grows to hate the touch of money. He hates capitalism. He wants, if anything, to offer products made from coconuts. He's a cocovore.
He is. He starts out as a vegetarian in Germany and successively comes to realize that he must only eat fruit, so he becomes a fructivore. And then he begins to despise every other nutrient, and he ends up with the coconut as being the most supreme of all foods. And so he goes to these islands and actually does even buy a little island for himself and opens a coconut plantation and gets people to work for him, islanders, and sits there naked and eats coconuts for 16 years.
His beard getting longer and longer.
As does his hair.
As does his hair. He develops leprosy, and he attracts people. First, they are acolytes, willing acolytes, some of them sexually deviant, some of them tourists.
Yes, he develops a cult following, and youngsters from Germany, where he sends his pamphlets to see a type of messiah in him, and they come and visit him, and at the same time, when they do start arriving, they start dying like flies.
Poor August, who becomes known in this narrative as our poor friend, because we're led to feel very sorry for him. There's no mercy for him in this world.
Absolutely not. It all goes downhill, essentially. I mean, he becomes more and more insane, which of course is also due to malnutrition. He becomes very, very slender. I think I envision him as about 67 pounds or something, and His belly extends out, bloated, in certain photographs that we know of him. There are two or three still in existence.
Yes, that's the big surprise. Yes. He actually existed.
Yes, yes, of course.
And this is a historical novel on the one hand and something of a pastiche of a historical novel simultaneously. So that the tone is a very slippery and funny tone. I wanted people to hear, this is the paragraph that describes what the coconut is.
After having adjudged all other foodstuffs unclean by process of elimination, Engelhardt had abruptly stumbled upon the fruit of the coconut palm. No other possibility existed. Cocos nucifera was, as Engelhardt had realized on his own, the proverbial crown of creation. It was the fruit of Yggdrasil, world tree. It grew at the highest point of the palm, facing the sun and our luminous Lord God. It gave us water, milk, coconut oil, and nutritious pulp, unique in nature. It provided humankind with the element selenium. From its fibers, one wove mats, roofs, and ropes. From its trunk, one built furniture and entire houses. From its pit, produced oil to drive away the darkness and to anoint the skin. Even the hollowed-out, empty shell made an excellent vessel from which one could manufacture bowls, spoons, tankards, indeed even buttons. Burning the empty shell, finally, was not only far superior to burning traditional firewood, but was also an excellent means of keeping away mosquitoes and flies with its smoke. In short, the coconut was perfect. Whoever subsisted solely on it would become godly, would become immortal. August Engelhardt's most fervent wish, his destiny in fact, was to establish a colony of cocovores. He viewed himself at once as a prophet and a missionary. For this reason did he sail to the South Seas, which had lured infinitely many dreamers with its siren song of paradise.
Now, in Los Angeles, where we both sit, there are many people who still believe this about the coconut. Is there any truth to it?
Well, I wouldn't know. I mean, is this true? Are there coconut adepts in... Has this taken hold?
Oh, yes. If you go to health food stores here, you will find all kinds of kefirs and special drinks and raw coconut and processed coconut.
Right.
It's quite a thing. I'm talking to Christian Kracht about his book, Imperium, and... At the same time as this may be true of the coconut, its truth does not matter to this book. In this book, all kinds of, you'll pardon me, cracked ideas take hold. We meet a fantastic queen. Is her name Queen?
Queen Emma.
Queen Emma. She's kind of brilliant. She's described as a half-caste. Her English isn't very good. When she signs a contract, she signs it with a smudgy thumbprint. She's a rather large woman. Her insight into men seems to have to do with her attraction to them. She's married many times.
Yeah.
Her wedding dress, we learn, is no longer white, but a yellowish color.
Well, she brings it out every 10 years to go forth and marry the next fellow, and usually they all sort of die or disappear. I think she's had 5 or 6 husbands. And yes, the book is full of these peripheral figures, such as the inventor of Vegemite, which is a vegetarian spread. The people in this book who are radical and militant vegetarians, they invent Vegemite.
What we watch is a kind of mounting hysteria, and the book has the wit and slyness to suggest that this is the kind of fanaticism that will eventually give rise to a peculiar painter, a house painter named Adolf Hitler.
Yes.
His name is never used, but we are familiarized with his mustache, and we know that, yes, there are innocents who languish, and then there are people who have the courage of their convictions, and this is, therefore, a very seditious novel. It's a novel that suggests that these kinds of foolish fantasies can take a horrifying shape and a very destructive one.
If the utopia that is to be created is not based on coconut consumption, but on drawing from esoteric roots, and then adding hierarchical structures where people, someone is actually then worth less because they're not following the instructions properly.
Within these cultures, an odd number of anti-Semites show up. Part of their escape to the South Seas is to escape the spread of the strange races that populate the globe. They're fine with people who will help them build coconut huts. But
who are easily subjugated
and
are colonized.
So what about control? Where does it come from in this book?
That's a very difficult question. I think it comes out of language, and specifically, in this case, out of German language. It molds itself around, or German is a very precise, nuanceless language where it's very constrained and there are no gray areas. And in a sense, it's hard to say, but the German language constructs this
hierarchy.
Yes, it does.
A nightmare of bureaucratic category.
Precisely, yes.
And this book, Imperium, joins the work of Max Sebald on the one hand in fiction and Paul Celan in poetry, in a distrust of the German language and German thinking. It's a book, we have one such book in America by a writer named Walter Abisch called How German Is It? And it is a kind of anti-literature in which we watch the things German flower and take root the way they do and produce the horror house of consequence.
Yes. But all the same, there is a moment of beauty and of a very transient moment, but somehow it all goes wrong. And this ends up, as you say, in the madness of the mid-century. Yes.
It's strange beauty, a certain kind of whimsy. There's a gentle spiritedness about August. He would never, if we were picking him in particular, we would, at one point, he's so light that another character lifting him feels like he's lifting a child.
Yes.
This is a character who's been sent to slaughter, to murder August with a revolver, and he just can't do it. It would be like killing a child. It's too easy on the one hand and pointless on the other. And yet there is, what are we going to do with this naked, bearded man who sits there...
Thumbless,
yes. He's cut off one of his thumbs and he sucks the other one. He's like a character in a Edward Lear poem.
Well, he is a vegetarian and he travels to the the least vegetarian place of all, which is, Papua New Guinea. Before it was German New Guinea for about 25 years, until the Australians, on the eve of World War I, annexed it. And so he travels, with these very lofty intentions into a very dark place where people were eaten. And he then switches everything around in his mind as he gets madder and madder to move away from the coconut as the ideal diet. He moves towards himself as the ideal diet.
Self-consumption, yes. Different kind of self-cannibalism.
Yes. And well, he starts out by, he just chooses his little fingernails, and it's the only protein that he, animal protein that he consumes.
And yet I persist in telling listeners that it's not a grotesque novel, because its style is always busily concealing. Mm. In its delightful twists and turns and ins and outs, its lengthy sentences, its strange phrasings, it gives us the sense of a very, delightful tour of an exotic place, only the place is not as exotic as the person in the place. Mm. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from KCRW. I'm talking with Christian Kracht about his book, Imperium. We'll continue after this short break.
Are you thinking about buying a new car? Consider donating your old one to KCRW and support the unique mix of news, music, and culture you love. You'll become a KCRW member and get a nice tax write-off. For details, visit kcrw.com/cars.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Christian Kracht about his recent book, Imperium, a unique adventure through an aesthetic obsession with a new religious order and coconuts. Now, when you first read about August Engelhart, did you say, aha, I've got it, I've got a novel?
When I began this, which was about 4 years ago, there was very little about him at all. I came across a photograph of him at a yard sale in Germany, and it was a sepia-tinted photograph of a youngish man with a loincloth and a long beard and hippie-ish hair, and it it sort of looked as if it were 1969 or 72 or something. And then on the little postcard, it was a postcard, it said this was taken in 1902, and I looked at it, and it was very jarring, because there was a time shift here going on, and then I put this photograph in my apartment, and then I kept going back to it and trying to find out stuff, and nothing was known. So then one thesis had been written at the University of Auckland in New Zealand, and I traveled down to meet the fellow who had written this thesis in Auckland, and then he started explaining, and he said, well, you must go up to Fiji first, and I won't come with you, but just go, and then travel up to New Guinea from there, mind the mosquitoes, and then it just took hold, and then I discovered that in a nutshell, it was sort of the German madness in one, fellow.
It's amazing. Because, he travels to Fiji as well, yes. August does, because he hears that there's someone on one of those islands who've done him even one better. This is a man, he doesn't eat coconuts, he just digests sunlight. He lives on sunlight, he takes in
prana.
Sunlight. Yes. but he is doing this with an accomplice who we've met already. He's stolen most of August's money. And this is a con man, and we become aware that part of the Well, the pleasure and nightmare is that these spiritual people are often in it for a buck. August is the purest person in the book.
Well, he's in fact shocked by the fact that this is all about money, and that the adepts of this light eater, who's also a German, who's, you know, he has 50 people who are paying homage to him and living on the beach with him, bring him their valuables and baubles and watches and so forth, which he keeps in a little chest in his hut. So he discovers, he is innocent. He discovers that this is all fraud.
He's pleased when people come to visit and perhaps join him because he believes he knows the truth about life. He's a very peculiar man, and we're reading a book about the best kind of the defeat of innocence. It's the great subject.
Yes, though innocence is already, the defeat of innocence is already inscribed in his Germanness by the narrator, who knows about all this and who knows what will happen and who knows where this is all leading. And so the narrator is probably writing this or looking back from the 60s, 70s, I think, maybe one could say that, and sort of,
knowing what's happened.
He's seen World War II. He's seen the death camps. And he's, you know, sort of grabbing Engelhardt and sort of pulling him up by his longish hair and saying, well, look, you know, this is all very good and fine, but
look what happens.
Yeah, look what happens. Look what happens to German thought.
Now, this book was published in Germany.
Yes.
Did they understand it? Did they go into denial? Was it embraced?
Well, it was. Since it is a little bit satirical in tone, Germans don't take to that very well.
And yet it was very popular, I believe.
It was popular, but it... because the narrator is not a narrator who moralizes, as Germans like to have it, it's not clear-cut, you know, it's sort of...
We're not told what to think.
No, we're not told what to think. And the language that the narrator uses is a colonial, a language of the colonialist master, though he should be using another language, which is that of, you know, having seen what... So there are actually two narrators. One is narrating inside Engelhardt's brain, and the other one is somewhere else, though I haven't quite really figured that out myself.
And it's peculiar because the narrator, who is distant, seems ready himself to topple into a kind of ferocity. It's almost as if this narrator is ready himself to embrace the Fourth Reich. You know, he sees what happened, and he's already a part of what could happen again.
Well, it's interesting that you should say that, but I mean, I think because the Imperium, of course, there are several Imperiums in this book. One of them is, of course, the Empire of the Coconut Empire, and the other one is, of course, the German Imperium. And in the very last pages, we discover the American Imperium, and which...
Well, that's the terrifying center of the book, that we come to see what Gore Vidal calls the war to continue wars. This August is seen to be a perfect subject for a movie. Yeah. His foolishness will be misinterpreted now by thousands of bright lights.
Mm.
The book likes in its way.
But he's also saved by Americans. You know, they come and find him, and he's after the Second World War, which is, you know, 20, 30 years later, he's hiding in this cave, and he's, you know... He's
yes, and it's horrible. They give him hot dogs. He's never seen one before.
He hasn't had meat for 50 years.
It is, yes. And there's this terrible yellow stuff that they put on it, bright yellow. Yeah. Mustard, of course, yeah.
They put a T-shirt on him and cut his beard and give him a watch. And
it's the image of the rescue from the concentration camps, of those frail and barely human bodies being resuscitated by Frankfurters. And, you know, we somehow think, oh, there is no good world, or as William Gass once said, there is no right life to be lived.
Or there is no right life to be lived in the wrong life.
Yes. The book has been squeezed into English.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
By a very, very good translator who seems, I don't read German, but the book reads very, very amusingly. And I'd say that, you know, its satirical aspects, its innocent aspects, its impulse to protect the innocent, they all contradict. The book has a very contradictory tone, which makes for a comic novel. We're constantly meeting people in a sort of disguise. Hermann Hesse wanders through, as does, we're warned, Jack London is about to arrive.
Kafka.
Kafka comes, yes, Einstein. All sorts are making their way through this book, and we're reminded, oh yes, eccentrics make up what's interesting about the world. Who's to determine which kind of eccentric we want to encourage and embrace?
Yes.
I've been talking with Christian Kroc, author of Imperium, published by Farrar, Straus and Giroux. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a great honor.
You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez, Alan Howard, associate producer. The technical director, Mario Diaz. Special thanks to David Sobel, my assistant. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she's a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Linda Rosenkrantz is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.